Good evening, everyone. Welcome back to Discovering Buddhism. I just have a couple of quick announcements, three quick announcements tonight. The first one is this information sheet. I revised it since last Monday, so if you want a revised copy, you can grab one. It just incorporates a couple of the announcements I made then, that the last class session on October 5th is going to run from 7 until 9 because it will incorporate our practice day. And also the texts, Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand and Mind of Clear Light by His Holiness, are not required this time. However, we have lots of copies of this in the bookstore, and it really is a wonderful text. So if you're interested in, even though it's not required, if you're interested in reading it, having it, it's in the bookstore. My last announcement is that if you want to stick around afterwards for a half hour or so for a discussion about what we've covered in class, you're welcome to do that, and we'll just meet at the big table out in the lobby. That's it. And Robbie's here, so I'm sure he'll be in shortly.
Good evening.
Okay. Welcome to the second of only four classes in the Discovering Buddhism module, Death and Rebirth. Let's see, do we have anyone who's here tonight who wasn't here last week? A couple of people. Okay. And we'll start off with some review. And I think you'll be able to jump right in. Anybody here at Kadampa Center for the very first time tonight? Okay, we picked a nice cheery subject to drop in on. as I said last week, there are two main meditations that I wanted to cover in this short course. The first is the 9-point meditation on death. And we started that last week, and we'll finish that tonight, and then we'll begin the death process meditation. The first one is an analytic meditation where we use our ability to think and reason with ourselves to think about certain aspects of death, including its inevitability. And then the second one, the death process, is actually rehearsing the what actually happens at the time of death. So we'll begin with three prostrations. You don't have to do those, but you're welcome to join in. And then we'll do our prayers in the prayer book with the golden cover. Okay, and you can open the gold prayer book to pages 34, where we'll do Taking Refuge three times in English, the four immeasurables in English. We'll do all of these in English. The seven-limb prayer, and then the short mandala offering. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun, and the moon, I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kam Niryatayami. Okay. Begin by reviewing the 9-point death meditation. Last week we talked a little bit about why it may be useful to think about death and dying, because it's the one thing all of us will definitely experience. We know that, but we don't think about it. And the Buddhist point of view is that it's something that we should prepare ourselves for, because when we get into the next meditation, the death process meditation, we'll talk a little bit about what someone can accomplish during the moment of death if they're prepared for it and have rehearsed it and understand what's going to happen to them. But we'll go finish up with the 9-point death meditation first. So there are three main points in this meditation, each of them with three subpoints and a conclusion. And last time we meditated on the first group, 9-point death meditation. What's the first major point, the one we meditated on last week? Death is inevitable, death is certain. Something we understand intellectually, but we may not have realized. The second main point is... Yes, time of death is uncertain. And the third main point is, only our
I'll put SP, spiritual practice, can help us at the time of death. Okay, so under this first topic, there are three subtopics that we meditated on. The first one was, everybody dies. Everybody in the history of the world has died or is in the process, is going to die. No exceptions. Buddha died. Jesus died. Everybody dies. Second one is, our life is getting, is going in one direction, is getting shorter. Just since we came into the room tonight, all of us, no exceptions, we're all closer to the moment of death. There's nobody that's going in the other direction. Our life is continually getting shorter. And the third point is, yes, we know we're going to die. We know our life's getting shorter. The opportunity, the time for spiritual practice is limited. It's not something we can necessarily put off, but it's limited. There's not going to be more. We're not going to wake up tomorrow and have more time, more life left to us. And so if we meditate on this, we come to a conclusion, the Buddha said. And what's that conclusion that we come to? Yes, therefore, use your life wisely. Because if we've been practicing the Lam Rim, and we've started off, you know, some of the previous topics, one of them is the preciousness of human life. So we combine that previous meditation on the precious human life with this on the inevitability of death, we come to the conclusion, it just makes sense to take advantage of this life. It's very precious, but it will end. Okay, the time of death is uncertain. We didn't meditate on this tonight. Anybody know what the first topic here is? Yes, Okay. We think we're going to get our average or median 84 years or whatever, maybe 86 years if we're a woman, but there's absolutely no guarantee of that. Our lifespan is unknown. What else? Yes, there are many causes of death. Let's see, many causes of death. And the third one is, yes, our body is fragile. Yeah. Another way of putting that is there are very few causes of life. Our body is, just by virtue of being what we call a caused phenomena, or something that is the result of past karma, it says our body is in a continual state of decay from the moment it's formed. It's already starting to fall apart. The cause of death is being born. From the moment we're born, that in a way is the cause of death at some point. Okay, so the body is fragile. It's falling apart as we speak. Okay, so we come to the conclusion that... Yes, okay. Spiritual practice now, not tomorrow, not next year, not after I retire, okay? And then, only our spiritual practice can help us at the time of death. And the subtopics under that are family and friends, not of any use. They can't go with us. Okay, they can help us as we approach the time of death, if we're created the karma to have a death where they're available to us, and we'll talk a little bit about that maybe in the last class, what we can do to help people who are dying from a Buddhist point of view, but they cannot go through the death process with us. We go through that process alone. Nobody is holding our hand. Nobody's walking with us through it. And it can be very frightening if we're not prepared for that. And we'll talk about that in the death process meditation. But we do it alone, okay? Next point is, yeah, our possessions, our stuff can't help. We don't get to pack a suitcase. Okay. And the third one is, yeah, our body. Even our body, no matter how good we've taken care of it. Because the Buddhist definition of death is, again, the body can't help. How do we define death from the Buddhist point of view? Yeah, the mind and body separate, okay? The body decays, the mind continues on. So you can't take your body with you through that process. It's purely your consciousness, okay, with its karmic imprints that's going through that process without family or friends, without our teachers, you know, without our though we can take what they've taught us, without our possessions, not even our body. So the conclusion is, practice seriously, yeah. Practice well. Because that is the only thing that you can take with you, is your spiritual practice, your realizations, your understandings. Okay, any comments or questions on that outline before we do our analytic meditation? Okay. So we'll do one meditation. We meditated on the first point last week. So we'll meditate on the second point, then we'll take a little break, and then we'll meditate on the third point. And like I said, this is what's called an analytic meditation. And if you're new to this type of meditation, it may seem like thinking, and there's definitely an element of thinking in it. Definitely an element of analysis, using your experience, your memories, your ability to reason with yourself. You can even argue with yourself to really take these points and deal with them in a kind of deep, deep matter. And it's meditation because you're staying concentrated on that. That's the object. And if your mind wanders from that object, you know, goes off into some other thought, you just come back to it over and over again. And it's that process of coming back to the chosen object that makes this meditation and not just daydreaming or thinking or even contemplation. Okay, so let's get our posture. Begin by checking your posture. The most important part is that your back is straight, a little straighter than you normally sit. Not rigid, but definitely a little stretched out. Your head is straight on your shoulders, not tilted to one side or the other. Maybe just a degree or two in front of the vertical. Your eyes are either just slightly open so that a little bit of light comes in without just really seeing anything, or you can lightly close them. Your mouth is lightly closed, not clenched. Your tongue is on the upper gums, on the back side of your upper teeth. Shoulders are down, not hunched up, but down. And a little bit back, so your chest is a little bit opened up. Upper arms are away from the side of your body. And you can either put your hands on your knees, or you can have right hand resting on left with your thumbs touching, slightly below the level of the navel. Your legs are in a stable, comfortable position. Any kind of cross-legged if you're sitting on a cushion. If Yoni cushion, it's good to sit a little bit towards the front, not in the middle, so that your pelvis is a little bit open. If you're sitting on a chair, it's fine to put a cushion under your feet, but have your feet nice and flat. So go ahead and check your posture now. Identify any sources of tension or discomfort and deal with them now. So once we begin the meditation, the posture is stable and something that you really don't need to pay attention to. The point is not to torture yourself or make yourself uncomfortable, but really have a posture that's very solid and grounded so you're not distracted from the object of the meditation. And we'll begin the meditation by taking three deep breaths from the abdomen, with the stomach expanding on the in-breath and contracting on the out-breath, air moving in and out through our nostrils. And it's okay to make a little bit of noise during these few breaths just to help settle the mind. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And we take a minute and set our motivation, our reason for doing this meditation. Any motivation is fine. If it's just curiosity or you just want a little bit of quiet or peace and calm, that's fine. But it says that the most powerful motivation is what's referred to as the bodhicitta motivation. That I am doing this meditation to develop my mind so that I can be of greater benefit to all sentient beings. Sentient meaning beings with consciousness. And include yourself in that. So I can be of benefit to everyone. Seems grandiose and even a little bit unnatural, but that's okay. Just kind of think along that way for a minute. Thank you. And having set our motivation, we can begin the actual meditation first by just a little bit of concentration meditation. We place our mind on the movement of the breath as it moves in and out through our nostrils. The physical sensation of the slightly cool air flowing in through our nostrils and then out. And every time our minds wandered from that, as it inevitably will, we gently bring it back. Just direct perception of the movement of the breath. And now that our mind is a little bit calmer, a little bit clearer, a little bit more focused, we begin our analytic meditation. Last week we meditated on the inevitability of death. Death is certain for every one of us. And now we're going to meditate on the uncertainty of the time of death. There is not one person in this room who knows when they will die. That is completely unknown, unpredictable. And the first point we're going to think about to ourselves is that our lifespan is unknown, predetermined, is not predetermined. We all think we're going to be here tomorrow, but we may not. We all think we have 20, 30 years, and we're making plans around something that is completely unpredictable. I'm going to work till this age, I'll save this much money, then I'll retire, then I'll do this, then I'll do that. Absolutely no guarantee that things will work out that way. Death can come at any moment, at any age, in childhood, adolescence, in our 30s, 40s, or we may be here to 105. You may want to bring to mind some people who died unexpectedly when they were younger than you are now. Not to get depressed, but just to get a sense that the life, nobody has a guaranteed lifespan. Nobody has a warranty. People you know or famous people that have died when they were younger than you are now. Think of all the children that have died before their parents. Certainly nobody planned on that or thought that was going to happen. Or think about healthy people who died before sick people. Sometimes there's a man and wife and one's quite ill, and it's the healthy one who dies first, for whatever reason. That wasn't in the plan. The healthy person was going to take care of the sick one. And all of a sudden, we can hope we're going to live till we're 70 or 80 or 85. We kind of assume since we've gotten this far, the chances are pretty good we'll make it to that age, but no guarantee. If you find your mind wandering from the subject, bring it back. Bring it back over and over. Lifespan is unknown. And now we'll move on to the second point, that there are so many causes of death. Again, this is not to get depressed. This is just being realistic. That by virtue of having a human body and a human mind, the causes of death are infinite. They're the external causes, earthquakes, floods, volcanoes. Car wrecks, plane crashes. Other people, wild animals, poisonous snakes. I mean, so many things out there that could be the cause of my death at any moment. Again, this is not to get depressed or frightened, and if you start to feel that way, just back off for a minute. But it's just being realistic, looking at our condition as a human being. And then there are the internal causes of death. One little cell that goes haywire, just one cell out of millions in our body, can start to multiply as a tumor, and double and quadruple and grow and be the cause of death just from a minuscule little cell that has a genetic defect. Everything else that can go wrong in our body, a blockage in a coronary artery, a little blood vessel in our brain that bursts, causes a hemorrhage. lungs that fill with fluid. So many internal causes. Even the things that we think of as supporting life can be the cause of death. We may develop a fatal food allergy. Food that sustains life can be the cause of death. Medicine taken to heal ourselves, if taken in the wrong dose, can kill us. Our house that provides us with shelter can burn up around us and be the cause of death. We think of those things as supporting life, but they too can be the cause of our death. Just think about people that you know personally who have died recently, and how many different causes there were of their death. Accidents, diseases, so many causes of death. Now we move on to the third point. Our human body is so fragile. Just a microscopic virus can utterly destroy it. Our body feels solid and strong, and for most of us now, comparatively healthy. But it literally could fall apart in 24 hours with an overwhelming infection. Our kidneys could stop working. Our GI tract could slow down. Our heart could stop pumping. I mean, it's amazing that it holds together as well as it does. All these parts crucial to life. And if just one of them fails, the consequences can be overwhelming. Think about the times that you've been in physical danger, or you've had a close call, a near accident, or almost falling off a rock when you were hiking, or nearly tripping and hitting your head seriously. Everybody's had some close calls where if things had just been a little bit different, that would have been it. Just by virtue of getting older, our body, from the moment we're born, is beginning to fall apart. It's in the process of gradual disintegration. The process definitely picks up speed as we get older. A lot of us are starting to notice it more distinctly now, that things aren't the way they used to be. That things that used to be easy now take some effort, both physical and mental effort. The body is continually falling apart, disintegrating. Its component pieces are separating. Really, the only cause of life is the egg and sperm coming together. That's it. That's the only cause of life. and the causes of death are so many more. So when we think this way, when we do our analytic meditation, the point is not to get depressed or gloomy. The point is to see how precious life is, yet how uncertain the future is. So not only do we need to develop ourselves, do our spiritual practice, but we need to do it now. We don't know how much time is left to us. So we need to do what's important. Tell people we love them. Do those acts of kindness. And develop those positive qualities of mind. Not tomorrow. Not next year, not after I retire, not after I get all these, this, and this done, but now, this very moment. And if you get a sense of that, just stay with that, a conviction that I need to act now. And now you can relax your concentration. Okay, should have done a dedication. I forgot about that. So do a little dedication mentally. Acknowledge the positive energy you've created. Okay. Okay, who's feeling suicidal? Any comments or questions about the second major point? If you want to say something, please use the mic. Yeah. Anybody depressed? Okay, good. You're not okay. If you are, that's okay. That's not the point of the meditation, though. And to get depressed, it's really to motivate yourself. Okay, so let's stretch, and then we'll meditate on point number 2, 3. Just stand up and stretch your legs, and we'll do another one. Yes, thank you. You didn't chop it up into pieces. Okay. Yeah, that was great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, we'll do this meditation in about another 15 minutes, and then we'll hand that out. Okay. Any comments or questions before we start back in? We'll do another 15 minutes of meditation or so. I gotta wait till my leg wakes up, though. And meditation posture doesn't get easier as you get older. I can definitely say that. At least I can get down on a cushion still. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any questions or comments? Before we move on to point three. Okay, we'll do the same routine. Check your posture first. And three deep breaths from the abdomen. And to now set your motivation, generating, even if it's difficult, the bodhicitta motivation. And now we'll do a couple minutes of concentration meditation, placing our mind on the breath, moving in and out through the nostrils. That's all just that physical sensation. And when our mind wanders away, we gently bring it back over and over and over again. And now we use this concentrated, focused, alert mind. We're not putting ourselves to sleep, but we're really kind of going into a little bit of super alertness, really. Not nervous and agitated, but very clear and alert. We use that mind to do our analytic meditation on the third major point of the 9-point death meditation. And this point is that the only thing that can help us at the time of death is our spiritual practice. And as we mentioned, death is the separation or the falling apart of the body, the physical aspect of ourself, the body with all the organs, including the brain, which starts to decay and fall apart, and the mind or the consciousness, which is the non-physical aspect of ourself that is without beginning and without end. The body falls aside and the consciousness continues on to the next rebirth. And the consciousness carries with it all our karmic imprints, all the imprints made by everything we have done, everything we have said, everything we have thought in this and previous lifetimes. That karma is carried on the consciousness. The positive karmic seeds are those that will bring us happiness in the future. The negative karmic seeds, those motivated by greed or attachment, anger, and ignorance, will cause us suffering. So the only thing that can benefit us at the time of the death is those positive qualities that we've developed in our mind. Qualities of love, generosity, acceptance, non-clinging. Those are positive qualities of mind that will benefit us at the time of death. But to have those qualities at the moment of death, we have to develop them beforehand. We have to prepare for death now. We have to develop our mind in such a way that we can have a calm, peaceful transition to the next lifetime. It's death calling for someone. Someone's time's up. Yeah, could we turn the phone off, whoever it belongs to? Thank you. Okay. There's a message from beyond. Okay, so first thing we need to realize is our family and friends are not going with us. It's not a bus ride. It's definitely a solo trip. And, you know, we'll talk about this a little later. In fact, family and friends during the death process actually sometimes can be a hindrance to a peaceful death, because qualities of attachment and clinging can arise on both sides. Sometimes it's better just to die quietly with maybe just one person there who can recite some mantras. Say farewell to, if we have the good fortune to have a peaceful death that we can plan, say farewell to those that we cling to. But they can help us in this life, but they are not going to go through the death process with us. Our consciousness goes completely alone. Not even the people we love the most or our dearest friends are going with us. So really being attached in a clinging sort of way to others can actually be a hindrance at the time of death. Our possessions are not going with us. We're not taking any clothes. We don't get to take extra pair of shoes. Our bank account's definitely not going with us. Our house. Everything that we've put so much effort into keeping and piling up in this lifetime, every little bit of it will be left behind. Nothing of that sort is going with us. Not one penny, not one item of clothing, not our favorite books or the music we love. All of that is left behind. And again, sometimes those can be a hindrance if we're worrying about who gets what after we die, or are they going to fight about it? They're certainly not going to help us in any way at the time of death. And as we mentioned, our body is not going with us. Probably the thing in the world that we know the best, know the closest, know in the most detail, that has been with us every moment of this life is going to be left behind. And that can be completely frightening. This body that we've exercised and taken care of and made sure it got enough rest and made sure it looked nice. Not going with us, can't help us. In fact, may be a source of incredible pain as we go through the death process. It's certainly not going to be a help. If we're lying there and can't breathe and we feel like there's an elephant on our chest or racked by pain, that's a real hindrance to the qualities we want to have at the time of death, for our mind to be as calm and clear as possible. So it's pretty obvious that the only thing that will help us go through the death process with awareness, with understanding, is our spiritual practice. The development of positive qualities of mind that will carry on with us, that will go through us, with us through the death process, into the intermediate state, what's sometimes called the bardo, and then on to the next lifetime. So thinking about that, we develop a real deep conviction of all three points, that I have to work on my mind, I have to work on it now, and I have to work on it to the utmost of my ability in the most skillful way possible if I wish to have a calm mind at the time of death. And you can end the meditation by doing a brief dedication. Acknowledge that you've done a little bit of spiritual practice. It's made a positive imprint on your mind stream that will ripen in the future to benefit all sentient beings. Okay. Any questions or comments? Everybody's very quiet tonight. Okay, we have a mic over here, please.
Earlier today, my devotion was, the question in the devotion was, if your house was on fire, what objects would you take on your way out?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this journey has led me, my first instinct was, well, nothing, I'd just get out.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because my son's a firefighter, so that's his advice. But I did think, you know, spent some more time on it and realized, even maybe a year ago, year and a half ago,
mm-hmm.
I would have taken certain things.
Mm-hmm.
I would have tried really hard to grab certain things.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like this was kind of parallel to that.
Yeah, a little bit of non-attachment. Any other comments? Okay, let's see. You won't give out the handout? So that's the 9-point death meditation. So I think you're familiar with that. Now we're going to move on to the second major meditation. And Joanna has a handout on this. I'll wait till that's passed out before we start the discussion. How many? Let's see, we need one here. Anybody else? Oh, wait, here's an extra one.
Oh, here's
the
extra one, too.
Okay. Here we go. Okay, this is the death process meditation, or the death dissolution meditation. And the first thing I have to say is I am completely unqualified to teach on this, but it's part of the course, so I have to do this. This is really complicated stuff, and it's very much involved with certain tantric practices and things that I am not an expert on, and I am sure I will tell you some things that are completely wrong, but I do just want to get it introduced and have you become familiar with it. And this is the meditation that His Holiness the Dalai Lama does at least 4 times a day. He considers it that important. And this is a rehearsal for the moment for what happens when we die. It's practicing that we're dying so that when it does happen, we're familiar with what's going on, and we can take advantage of the experience, because this is one of the times where we access our most subtle consciousness, and we can actually have some control over what happens in the intermediate state and our next rebirth. You know, so that highly realized people actually go into the bardo and choose their next rebirth, what will be most beneficial to the most people or the most beings. Most of us, we just zoom through it and we just grab on the first rebirth that comes up. Actually, our karma forces us onto the first rebirth that comes by, and it's a very uncontrolled, frightening experience. But if we're prepared for it, if we understand what's happening to us, we can actually begin to control the process. So this is rehearsing what happens at the time of death. And this discussion of it is based on someone who has a relatively peaceful death. Now, when we have a violent, sudden death, we go through all this, but it happens in a much more disorganized and chaotic manner. But we practice going through it in this order. So if we do have a violent death, as parts of it come up out of sequence, we'll recognize what they are and we can make sense of it. Even if it happens like that, there's so many mental moments that we can actually begin to understand the process. And this model is based on, first you have the body ceasing to function, various functions of the body stop in a certain order. Okay, so you have physical things that are happening. You have mental events in which your grosser levels of consciousness start to dissolve or start to stop functioning. And so that you're left finally with the most subtle consciousness, the one that continues on. And then there are also certain phenomena that appear to our mind. Okay, what are called in the column called the internal signs. These are kind of visions or things that appear to us, to our mind. So we've got the factor dissolving, which is the what's happening to the consciousness in the left-hand column. The external signs is what's happening to the body. And then the internal signs are these visions that appear to our consciousness as we go through this. And it's based on the the relationship of the mind and body is based on what they call winds, winds, or which are various energies that flow through our body. You can't find them when you dissect the body, but they're there. And it's said that the consciousness rides on the winds like a rider on a horse. So when that wind, there are multiple winds, so when a wind ceases during the death process, the part of the consciousness, the gross, initially the gross consciousnesses, cease also. Okay, as the wind ceases, the consciousness that's riding on it ceases. So the gross consciousness is the one we spend most of our life with, you know, anger, depression, jealousy, all this, and interacts with the world around us in a very crude sort of way. That consciousness falls away, dissolves. The subtle consciousness dissolves, and we're left with only the most subtle consciousness, or what's referred to as the clear light consciousness. And we get a direct experience of that during the death process. If we're prepared for it, if we're not prepared for it, we just zoom past, we experience it, but we don't even realize it. We just miss that opportunity. But if we're prepared for it, we have a direct experience of the clear light consciousness, and we can use that to guide us through the bardo. That's the perfect, clear, all completely pure consciousness. Everything else has dissolved away. Then as the consciousness moves through the bardo and is reborn with the, we're drawn to the father and mother in sexual intercourse because of our karma, egg and sperm come together. The clear light consciousness is in that new body, is joined with that new body. And then the process is reversed. That all the grosser consciousnesses and the grosser winds manifest and you go through the reverse process. So it's everything coming down together and then going back out. Okay?
Winds,
winds, like, whoo, the wind, W-I-N-D-S, yeah. It's an energy flow, that's all I can say, okay. Various energies in the body. Okay. Let's see. Da, 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 da. Okay. And these energy channels, they're connected to the chakras, which are various energy points within the body, basically along the spinal column. And in each of the chakras, this is, again, this is getting complicated. There's what's referred to as a red drop and a white drop, okay? The white drop being the masculine element from the father, the sperm. The red drop being the feminine element, the blood from the mother. Not physically those, but they're connected with those. When we're born, you have the white and the red that comes together. And they're white and red seeds at these various chakras within our body. And as we go through this dissolution process, those seeds come together to at the level of our heart, where there is a drop the size of a small pea, it said. It has a white top and a red bottom. And that's where the most subtle consciousness abides, in that drop, which is at our heart. Okay, but we can only, you know, it's, most of the times we won't notice this when we're going through the death process. So the process of dying involves changes or dissolutions of the winds, the consciousness, various aspects, and the drops. And the first four winds that dissolve are connected to the four elements: earth, water, fire, and air. So that's what these first four cycles are. The first one is the earth element. Okay, it's the consciousness that's associated with earth. The second one is the consciousness associated with water. The third one is the consciousness associated with fire. And the fourth one is the consciousness associated with, here they say wind element, but let's say air element, because we're using this word winds in another sense there. Okay. So, let's see, how are we doing on time? We're not going to get through all this. I want to just give you a little taste of it, and then next week we'll do an actual meditation on this. Go through the actual meditation. Excuse me, I misspoke. Earth, water, fire, and air are associated with the winds, with four different winds, okay? That various aspects of gross consciousness is riding on. Okay, so the first dissolution is the wind that's associated with the earth element, which is the bones and the hard parts of our body. Okay, so what's happening is form is starting to dissolve here. Okay, and the consciousness that's on that wind is what's referred to as the basic mirror-like wisdom. Okay? And that's the part of our consciousness that looks out and sees a whole lot of different things. Okay? So if we're lying, imagine we're lying on our bed, going through the death process. The first conscious part of our consciousness to dissolve is that part that can look out and see lots of things at the same time. Okay? That dissolves. The eye sense, our vision, starts to dissolve, becomes very bad, and we lose the ability to distinguish colors and shapes. Okay? Somebody looking at us from the outside, so that's what's happening internally in our mind. Somebody looking at us from the outside, our body is becoming weak, our limbs are limp, we lack energy, the ability to move our arms and legs. We can't open and close our eyes, and the general, the body just appears very weak. And then various mirages, and I'm not quite sure what they mean by this, but various, they just use the word mirage, and I don't know if they mean exactly what they mean. I don't think they mean palm trees out in the desert. I don't think the Tibetans will see that. But certain things appear to our mind as we lose our ability to see what's going on around us. We have certain visions that come to our mind. I'll try and research that before next week. Okay? So that's the first stage in the dissolution. Okay? As things start to fall away. Generally related to sight and form. Okay, then the next wind that dissolves is that that's associated with the water element of our body. We lose the ability to feel pleasure and pain. Okay, and the mind, the consciousness that's aware of pleasure and pain starts to dissolve. We lose the ability to hear. And so we're no longer picking up on sounds. So that's what is going on with our mind, with our consciousness. Then from the external signs are our saliva, sweat, and urine, and other bodily fluids start to dry up. We no longer hear sounds. I'm not sure what this sound in ears no longer arises. And then what appears to our mind is smoke. There's an appearance of smoke, gray smoke everywhere. Okay? So we've got the consciousness, the function of consciousness that's dissolving. We've got the external or physical signs as the body starts to decay. And then we have the internal signs that appear to our mind's eye. And we're not dead now. This is the death process. This is what's happening as we start to die, okay? The mind and the consciousness have not separated, but the grosser consciousnesses are dissolving and the body's starting to decay. So that's the first two steps. Let's see, we got a question back there.
The way you and I historically would think of death has already happened, though. Is that correct?
No, it is.
My thought process was this is what happens after somebody would say, he's no longer functioning anymore.
I think it can, for these stages, it could be either way, actually, probably. Okay, what happens though with these great yogis is when they get down to the just to the red and white seed at the heart, the very subtle consciousness, when all these other consciousnesses have dissolved and or all other aspects of consciousness have dissolved and the body has lost all its functions, we would definitely say they're dead at that point. Okay, but the yogi can stay with that clear light consciousness for 3 days, and the body just not rot, okay, even though it's lost a lot of its function. Okay, so we'll get into that, where there's some differences. It's hard to correlate with our, to line it up exactly. Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments? Yeah.
So who went through this and then was able to write about it?
You've been through it countless times. You just don't remember it. You just zoom through it.
But to be able to where we could put it on paper.
These great yogis who were so developed that they went through this process and they were just looking around and watching and seeing what happened. Yeah. They had developed these powerful qualities of mind and they were so calm and so focused that when they came into their next rebirth, they remembered all this, and they wrote it down. Yeah. Okay. We just zoomed through it, and we're just terrified, so we don't remember any of it. Yeah. Okay. Question back there.
The first cycle reminds me a whole lot of dreaming, of falling asleep and starting to dream.
Yeah.
With like the losing control over the body and the feeling of falling and then the appearances of like hallucination.
Mm-hmm.
Does that, could there be the benefit in like a dream practice?
Yes. Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, that moment of falling asleep, when you fall asleep, is along with, I mentioned a couple of the others last time, fainting, orgasm. Those are moments where you're accessing the subtle consciousness, not the most subtle consciousness, but you're leaving behind, dreaming itself, you're leaving behind the gross consciousness. So those are very valuable times to try and practice some sort of awareness. Okay, usually we're very unaware, you know, during those times, but if we can, that's a very good practice. And you'll also see as we get, next time as we get further into this, there's a period of complete blackness, and then there's a period of going towards the light. So it's very similar to what people describe when they have these near-death experiences. And they've actually, you know, they've done research on near-death experiences amongst Tibetans, and they describe the same thing of going towards the light that people in this country describe. Now, the point is, a near-death experience is not a death experience, okay? A near-death experience is getting partway through this, but you're not going the whole way. And you'll see that as we go through it next week. Okay? So I'm going to stop there. Just read through this, and it'll probably totally confuse you, but we'll just go through the whole thing next week and then do it as a meditation. Actually rehearse going through the death process. Okay? So just... yeah, just get a little bit familiar with the words here. And I've got to look up a couple of them that I'm not sure. But this is a very good version of this that was written by one of the Western monks who's based in Australia, who's very involved in the hospice movement. And so he set up this table. It's very useful because it's a very difficult subject. Yeah.